Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
You say that with a bit more energy? I know this is a sad episode, but really, could you sound any less enthused? Hello and welcome.
I prefer to think of it as somber and calming. Let's just ease into it today.
Hello and welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
This is your guided meditation. Close your eyes and confront your father issues. All right. Hello and welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and emotionally compromised time traveler.
And I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis and a bit of a Del Boy.
A Del Boy?
Yeah, it's what Rose calls her dad. It's a reference to a TV character, but it's basically like happy-go-lucky and a bit useless.
More to the point, we're here today to talk about Father's Day, episode 8 of series 1 of Doctor Who.
Father's Day aired on May 14th, 2005. It was written by Paul Cornell and directed by Joe Ahearne. For those of you keeping track, that's the same guy who directed Dalek. So you already know what we're getting into.
Reminder, time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape. And as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, you don't have to do anything you don't want to. But this is the last time we can be here. So let's get in the TARDIS.
Hey there, this is Lucia from the future. This episode covers some triggering subject matter, so we wanted to put in a content warning for discussions of death, self-sacrifice and suicide, and ableism. Please take care of yourselves. Now let's get back to the show.
This episode makes me so sad. I'm just going to cry. I cried through the entire title sequence. I cried through this entire episode. I was just a puddle of tears.
No, literally the opening shot, the fact that the opening shot is this still photograph, exactly the kind of photograph you find in little funeral pamphlets. Like they're exactly the kind of photos that you use as either missing persons or as the cover photo for a little funeral pamphlet. Like, I'm immediately in tears. I'm immediately emotional.
I was sobbing. The minute that Jackie padded the bed for young Rose to come in with a little photo album, cue sobs and getting emotional, just talking about it. I was wearing a white t-shirt and you would thought I'd entered a t-shirt contest. It was soaked in tears, like literally used up a quarter of the tissue box. It was a mess. I was a disaster. I kept having to pause because I couldn't see the show through my tears. It was bad. This is why I didn't watch this episode. I only watched this because you made me.
I adore this episode. I do. Which makes sense for me. God, I think it's a beautiful episode. I think it does so much work. This is the episode where we find out all about Pete. This is where we get Rose's tragic backstory. We have more context for Jackie. And it just hurts. It hurts all the way through.
This episode hurts so much that I almost didn't want to talk about it. And I'm going to make you edit this one, just so you know.
That's fine. So Rose has this concept. She has this idea. She tells the doctor about her dad. And basically, her dad was the victim of a hit and run accident. No one found him. No one saw him. By the time the ambulance got there, he was dead. And what Rose says to the doctor is that she wants to be that person. She wants to make sure that her dad doesn't die alone. And this is like I said, I think this episode is brilliant. I think it does so much work. It makes no sense that the Doctor would agree to this. The Doctor would not agree to do this because he knows, like, even if everything went right and that's all that Rose did is that she held Peter's hand as he died, so many things could go wrong. It's just way too big a risk. And the Doctor's been with Rose for a while now. He knows what happens when Rose is around people. Like, Rose does have a bleeding heart and she is impulsive and she is this force for reckless goodness. There's no way that this wouldn't end in disaster.
I am just... What bothers me the most is why it's so bad that Pete is alive.
Here's the thing. I think it matters because Rose matters. I think what actually matters is the Doctor is this, like, the Doctor is a point of flux, right? The Doctor is always going in and out of different points in space and time. And Rose being with the Doctor affects everything that happens. But in order for Rose to even meet up with the Doctor, Peter needs to be dead. Because the trajectory of Rose's life that takes her to be living in the projects and working the clothing shop and being Mickey's boyfriend, like all of the stuff that led her life to the point where the Doctor can take her hand and tell her to run. One of the major points in her life that affected everything else was Peter's death. So if Peter doesn't die, Rose's life is completely different. And she isn't where she's meant to be in order to meet the Doctor.
So I have to admit, I think a lot of my frustration with Father's Day is not exactly frustration with Father's Day. It's frustration with the fact that what happens in Father's Day is never revisited. And it's like Father's Day is never returned to, because rewatching it again, there's so much good about this episode. And it's hard for me to watch knowing that it's all wasted. And it feels like it doesn't matter. It feels like nothing in this episode matters. And that's what makes me upset, is that everything in this episode eventually gets undone later. And it makes me angry.
I wouldn't say that at all. I think it matters so much. I think Father's Day gives us...
I'm not saying, but I'm saying specifically, this episode makes me so angry for a variety of different reasons. Okay, let me back up. So one of the reasons this episode makes me angry is because Peter, this ordinary man being alive and everything, it creates these monsters, the Reapers, that never show up again. Even though all sorts of different points where time is in flux, they never show up again. And the thing that just makes me so furious is how differently Rose Tyler is treated compared to Amy Pond. And it is just not fair, because Amy gets her parents back with no repercussions. She gets her whole family back. She gets her whole life back and nothing happens. It's all reset. It's all fine. She gets her tiny little dad and her mom and they're all fine and she's all good and no Reapers happen to her. It makes me so upset and it makes me so angry to think about how Rose touching herself undoes everything, but Amy interacts with other versions of herself and that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I just hate all of it and the discontinuity and how it just ends up not mattering and throws so much of the good stuff about this episode away, like it never happened. And also there's this moment in the episode where the doctor is just so vulnerable with Rose. It's when he's watching the baby and Rose says, can't do anything right, can I? And then he says, since you ask, no. So don't touch the baby. And then she's like, I'm not stupid. And then he's like, you could have fooled me. But then all of a sudden, he stops the anger. He stops putting on the front. And then it's almost like he crumples in on himself. And he says, all right, I'm sorry. I wasn't really going to leave you on your own. But between you and me, I haven't got a plan. No idea. No way out. And like that kind of vulnerability, that kind of breaking down of his walls is something that we never see from the doctor ever again. They're never that vulnerable with another companion. Ten is never that vulnerable with anyone. Ten is all bravado and swagger. This scene, if I was to describe it, this scene feels like grasping onto the branch of a tree. Like when you're touching a tree or touching a piece of wood, and you can feel all the subtle imperfections of it. And that's how you know that it's a raw piece of wood and its bark. And I feel like with every other doctor, when you're talking to them, it's like a polished piece of furniture. If that makes sense.
It does. And I really like that metaphor.
In this moment, feels like you're touching the bark of the tree.
Yeah. I definitely think of all the doctors, the ninth is the rawest. The ninth is the one that's closest to the surface. So for some reason, the doctor agrees. And the only reason I can think that he would agree to this is that's what he wants to do with his own family. This is a gift that he's giving Rose that he can't give himself. That's the only reason I can think of, because literally everything else screams, don't do this. Which, yeah. So we turn up in 1987 and Rose freezes. Of course she does. This is so much to ask of her. This is so much to ask of herself. She's only 19 and she wants to do this incredible thing. I think watching the early episodes really emphasizes what an unfiltered force for good Rose is, like at her best. And like with all good fatal flaws, her best quality is also her worst quality. Like mm-hmm. her need to do good, the fact that she's compelled to do good often leads her into terrible consequences because she doesn't filter herself and she doesn't stop to think. She just does the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Big Gryffindor energy.
Gryffindor energy.
And so she begs the doctor to go back and do it again because she was too late. By the time the ambulance got there, he was dead and he heard sirens. And the doctor agrees, which is where, like, I really don't have time for him. Okay, you agreed to do it once. But she had the chance. No, don't do it. Don't. Bad. Very bad. Stop.
Like, really, doctor?
Does it feel like they're breaking character to make this happen? It kind of does to me. And also, the doctor is so much angrier. Like, the Rose and doctor dynamic is subtly different in this episode than it is anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot angrier. It's a lot more confrontational. In a way that doesn't feel true to either character or their relationship.
Yeah. It feels weird. Also, there's this moment where, like, he forces her to say that she's sorry for saving
her. Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I hate that moment.
I hate that so much.
But then there are other moments that absolutely feel like the doctor.
Yeah, the moment when he's talking to the couple that are getting married.
Stuart Hoskins and Sarah Clark.
Yeah. He says, who said you're not important? I've traveled to all sorts of places, done things you couldn't even imagine, but you too. Street corner, 2 a.m, getting a taxi home. Never had a life like that. Yes, I'll try and save you.
Yeah. Which speaks again to this weird dichotomy that we've seen a few times now, where the doctor, like this is the same episode where he calls Rose a stupid ape.
He's got a weird complex about humans.
He's got such a weird complex about humans. The doctor's the stupid ape. The doctor's the stupid ape for letting this happen. But they go back a second time and Rose, spur of the moment, big Gryffindor energy. So the doctor says explicitly, you have to wait. Like, I understand it's hard, but you have to wait until the first us moves. Otherwise, you're going to create a paradox, and that's bad. Don't do that. Also, quick sidebar, the editing in this whole sequence, the doubles doing all of that, brilliant work. Excellent work. It's so smooth. It's so clean. It works so well. But of course, instead of waiting, Rose literally pushes past them. And ends up saving her dad. And immediately everything starts going wrong. Like, immediately.
I thought one of the most brilliant moments in this episode was the use of music in all these episodes is great. But the doctor is walking towards the TARDIS. And in particular, when he opens the TARDIS and it's just a police box.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a brilliant moment. And like his panic when he opens it and it's just a police box.
I laugh every time that scene happens. I'm so sorry. It's so funny to me.
No, it's funny. It's a fucking hilarious scene. It's funny, but it's also just so brilliant. And I love it.
Yeah. No, I adore it. I adore that moment. I love the fact that we get to see the quote unquote actual interior of the TARDIS. Yeah, and it's actually a story reason and like all of that. And I get that it's meant to be this really serious, intense, scary moment. And every time I'm like, lol, easy day for production. Yeah. And this is where the shift happens. This is where the rift between Rose and the doctor really starts. So Rose goes back to the flat. It's the same flat that Rose and Jackie live in currently, but it's redesigned completely differently. And so she's still in this mind space of, because the other thing that's been happening is that her whole life, Jackie has been telling Rose about a very specific version of her dad that is very rose-tinted. And part of the heartbreak of this episode is those rose-tinted glasses being forcibly removed from Rose's eyes and seeing her dad as a real person and as someone who had flaws and who wasn't perfect and wasn't this crazy, innovative entrepreneur, businessman. He was kind of useless in terms of every day going from day to day, putting meals on the table, providing a stable life for his family. The fact that Jackie is so down to earth and Pete is so in the clouds provides real tension in their relationship and in their life. And that's something that Rose has never been privy to.
Yeah. It makes me think a lot about alternate universe Pete.
Yeah.
And whether or not this Pete would have grown into a similar Pete. How that would have shaped Rose's life.
I'm not sure. I think this world, Pete, I think Rose's actual dad was always destined to be on the trajectory that he was. I love the characterization of Pete. I adore it. I think it's so beautifully realized. I think it's so well done. The actor who plays him is spot on casting. He looks perfect. He acts perfect. Sean Dingwall, he's got his head in the clouds. He never quite focuses on any one thing. He's got all these ideas, but none of the discipline. But he's smart, right? Like, he gets things and he can see things clearly in a way that no one else around him really does, which is why he gets what's happened so quickly. And the fact that he is all these things and also, like, in a heartbeat, so, so quickly, with such clarity and conviction at the end, when he realizes what needs to be done, there's no hesitation, absolutely none. He fully recognizes what he needs to do and he does it.
I think the most upsetting thing to me about this episode, it isn't the fact that Pete dies, it isn't the fact that Rose loses her dad, it isn't any of the obvious things that made me cry at first. It's the way that the narrative of how Pete died changes. Because it changes his death from being a complete hit and run accident to his death being a suicide.
Yeah. I think from the way Jackie frames it at the end, I'm pretty sure she still thinks it was an accident. Like, she says, no one knows why he ran out. In this way that, from the way that Camille Cadore delivers that line, does not make me think that Jackie thinks that Pete was suicidal.
Okay, that's the way that I had interpreted it, and it just made me really upset.
Yeah. I think it's more of a mystery because I don't like how the narrative changes at the end. Because if everything goes back to the way it was, then surely, like, it's quite unclear, what do the people who went to the wedding that day, what is their memory of that day?
Yeah.
Because it's different now.
That's why I said, I don't believe you when you said you thought that this episode was going to get a 5 on science, because science does not work. The science makes no sense. It has not been explained. I don't believe it. It's fake.
I might have been optimistic. In terms of large scale, I think the science works. In terms of minutiae, it doesn't.
Especially if we want to hold up comparing the science to other examples in Doctor Who. Like I said, the existence of Amy breaks everything that happens to Rose, and it pisses me the fuck off.
So Rose gets to see inside the apartment, and it's full of all of Pete's stuff, top to bottom, all of his failed projects, all of his new starting projects. And she's just in the euphoria of having saved her dad. She's not thinking about anything else, and the doctor is just furious with her. Which,
I mean, I get it. I get it, because he makes the point of she wasn't interested in traveling with him until he said time machine.
I don't believe, like.
No, I get it. I get you might not believe that's her motive. And I don't believe that's her initial motive either. But I can see why he can think that's her motive.
I think the most likely thing that happened is that when he said time machine, she was thinking about, oh, so I don't have to, like, explain my absence. I think that was her one. Because the thing that stops her initially in episode one is being like, I have responsibilities and I can't just go swanning off. So then the doctor comes back and is like, you can swan off and be responsible. And she's like, okay, bet, let's go.
Yeah, no, that's what I think. And that's where I think Rose was. But I think now, in the context of Rose having asked him to go see her dad and then explicitly gone against what he said, I think he's like, oh, she was just playing me. That's not what actually happened, but I can see how he thinks that's what happened, because that's what makes sense to me. I would think the same. Like, I know, because I know Rose, that's not what actually happened, but I can see from his perspective why he would think that. Especially because she follows it up with saying, I know you'll still be waiting for me.
Yeah. That's a little.
I don't like that.
This is the start. It's messy all the way through, but the relationship between Rose and Doctor is really wrong throughout this whole episode. The dynamic is so off, and it frustrates me.
It's so uncomfortable. I really don't like this episode. It's making me super uncomfortable. Can we just skip to grading it?
No. And this is also where we start with the jokes about the fact that Pete is Rose's dad and doesn't know about it. So there's the one side of that dynamic, which is Pete starts acting like her dad without, like, that kind of goofy dad side character archetype. He's suddenly acting like that without really knowing why. And then there's also that really awkward, awful scene, which continues to be perpetuated throughout the whole thing because of Jackie, of Pete and Rose being sexual with each other. Which, thank God, Rose shuts down immediately and is like, no, 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 wrong, wrong, bad. But because later on, when Jackie...
The look of disgust on my face. I am very disgusted. This whole thing is disgusting. I am completely disgusted.
So we meet Jackie, and basically it turns out that Jackie and Pete do not have a perfect relationship by any means. It's heavily implied but left ambiguous that Pete cheated on Jackie at some point. And then because of that, and because Rose, as a young, attractive blonde who Jackie doesn't know, triggers that whole thing for Jackie, Jackie is really aggressive towards Rose and really looking for an argument with Pete throughout this whole episode until, like, the very end, which is awful.
It's so upsetting, and I hate all of it. I just hate all of it. I just don't want any of it. Can we just get to grading?
No. Because we've got to talk about it.
Why you belong on the feelings bench?
I have one golden light. I'm pretty sure we see Mickey's mom.
Yeah, before she gets murked.
It's the best I can do.
Also, that's not a golden light because she's a black woman that gets murked. I don't care for it.
Yeah.
Also, Mickey imprinting on Rose like a motherfucking. The fuck?
Yeah.
For why? Why you do this? No, no. No, 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 no.
It's again just really doing Mickey such a disservice. Including, there's a moment before when Pete asks if Rose has a boyfriend, to which she responds, I did have. No, you still do. You never broke up with him. You never had that conversation. You still have a boyfriend.
Including that you get upset about Trisha Delaney in 3 episodes. So why are you all up here with Adam and all I did have, and then you get all upset? Excuse you?
Mickey deserves better.
So much better.
But yeah, so we get young Mickey. All of his friends get eaten. His mom gets eaten. He runs to the church. He imprints on Rose. It's a bad day for Mickey. And then everyone sees these crazy winged reptilian monsters that look so, so bad and wrong. And everyone piles into the church. Because the older something is, the safer it is, apparently. The groom's dad dies and no one's mad about it because he's awful. The vicar dies, which is slightly more upsetting. I hate the groom's dad with a passion. He's so awful.
I hate him so much.
And the fact that he's talking to the bride's friends and trying to get the bride's friends to get her to stop the marriage as well.
I hate all, like, of
it. It's so awful.
Especially because they're both clearly bisexual and I support it so much. No, okay, they both give off. No, okay. Tell me that those two did not give off huge bi vibes.
Well, they do, absolutely. I spotted that little earring, that little bi bob cut.
There's no way that that couple is not high-key bisexual. That is the most bisexual couple I have ever seen on television. Icons.
Let them be bi in peace. Let them raise their little family. The fuck? Leave them alone. The doctor yells at Jackie. It's very upsetting. Rose asks the doctor if it's her fault, and Pete overhears this, and this is the first inkling we get that Pete's starting to work everything out.
Mm-hmm.
We have that sweet moment between the doctor and Stuart and Sarah, and then Pete basically figures out that Rose is his daughter from the future, and they have a really sweet conversation. Like, all of the conversations between Pete and Rose make me cry. The dynamic between them is so tender and so soft and so fragile, right? Like, you're aware the entire time that there's no way that Pete's gonna live. The way the whole episode is set up, I don't think there's a moment where the audience genuinely believes that Pete will get to survive. And it's so heartbreaking to watch Rose try and protect him, not only physically, literally save his life, but the fantasy she builds of their life together and the way that she doesn't want him to know that he died is just...
You're gonna make me start crying again. I don't want to cry on podcast. Can we just skip to the grading?
No, we have to go through all of it in excruciating detail because that is what we have promised the public. So eventually, finally, the doctor and Rose make up, and the doctor tells Rose very explicitly, do not touch the baby. Don't do it.
Hey, it's not her fault that Peter puts the baby in her arms. It's not like she was going to drop herself.
No, I get that. I feel like that's something that the doctor should have told everyone. Like, at the same time, he's at the pulpit being like, don't touch the key. We're going to get out of here. At the same time, also be like, and also, the blonde and the baby, keep them apart. You don't need to know why, but it's important. Also, can we talk about Christopher Eccleston with his little jacket off? Oh my God. It felt intimate. It felt sexy. I don't know why.
That sweater is so ugly. I hate it. I have an issue with that jumper. It is ugly. It is an ugly jumper. Christopher Eccleston, he's cute, but that jumper is ugly as fuck.
I think it was just because I don't think we ever see the doctor without the jacket on in any other scene. He's always got the jacket on. And then it was off. And I was like, this feels like too much. Am I allowed to look at this man without his jacket on? Oh my goodness. A brief spark in a very sad episode. Because then what happens? Jackie accuses Rose. There's this whole misunderstanding about who Rose is and what Rose means to Pete. And then Pete puts the infant Rose in Big Rose's hands, and paradox happens and everything breaks.
Hate that for all of them.
And the doctor gets eaten and the TARDIS collapses.
And then dies. And then...
No. Because what happens first is that Pete goes to Rose. And I was already crying. I was weeping during that conversation. Because, oh my God, he's so gentle with her. And he's so, like, the way he takes care of her. And you can see underneath all of, like... this idea that Pete is not really built for day-to-day life. He's a dreamer. He's a thinker. And that means that on a day-to-day, he's pretty useless. But at the core of him, the very center of him, is a man who truly, deeply cares. He's the man you want in a crisis. He's built for crisis. He's built for big things. He's not built for every day. And that it is through Rose saving him on the day he dies that he truly gets to live and to die again.
Yeah, but I hate that message. I hate that message so much. I feel like that message is problematic and I hate it and I want to stab it.
Please expand. Please tell me all your thoughts.
So one, I hate the idea of people being useless. And I hate the idea of people who are creative or dreamers or thinkers or whatever, not being able to focus and not being able to achieve their dreams. I feel like the idea that Pete is distracted, or the idea that Pete was always on that trajectory, or the idea that Pete was never going to be able to accomplish anything, is ridiculous. It's messed up. It's ableist. And I hate it. I hate it so much. It stresses me out. And the idea that the only thing he was good for is dying just bothers me so much. It's no, I don't think that sacrificing oneself is a worthy goal. I don't think that it's a good thing. I don't think that it's ever a good thing. I think that sacrifice, however noble, is always a waste. And I think that the idea that any one person is useless, the idea that he was never going to be able to achieve his dreams anyway, it's just sad and disappointing and leaves me with so many yucky feelings in general. It's just so upsetting. The idea that he thinks he would be such a terrible father that the best thing he can do for them is die reeks of problematic suicidal ideation to me, and it's horrible.
Yeah, I think the episode does have a few of those messages, but I also think, I don't know, I think it's clear that when I say Pete is useless, Pete can't do anything, Pete can't provide for his family, that's what I'm talking about, is how other characters view him and how the narrative frames him. I think what the episode does is prove that he is in fact capable and that he does have capacity and he does have...
Does it? Because... the episode seems to just say that all he's good for is dying.
No, I think what the episode does is show the power of self-conviction. Because what we see throughout the whole episode is that Pete is receiving messages from all sides that he's not worth it, right? Particularly from Jackie, which in Jackie's case, that comes from a place of fear, that Jackie is terrified that they've brought a baby into the world and won't be able to provide for her and that her life will be unstable. And so all of these problems that were always under the surface, like even as early, we see their marriage, we see their wedding vows, and Pete gets Jackie's name wrong. So from the very beginning, they've got these issues where Pete never quite commits to things.
Yeah, but so I guess the biggest reason that I struggle with this characterization of Pete is because I read Pete as being neurodivergent, and so all these criticisms of Pete feel to me as really ableist, and everything that's being said about him feels like it's being seen through a very neurotypical and judgmental lens that feels unfair to him. And so that's really adding to a lot of my distress about his characterization and the way that other characters treat him.
Yeah, I see that. And I do think that it's really unfortunate that the episode is set up so that Pete's death is inevitable. We establish, regardless of why, Pete's death is a fixed point in time. It does have to happen. So there is no way out of it. And so from my perspective, I see it as, within the context of the story, I find it an empowering moment when Pete's lived his whole life up to this point without a tether, like he's tetherless. And it's through Rose's intervention and the doctor's intervention that when he does, like, it's the difference between the Pete we meet at the very beginning dying and the Pete that we see at the end dying. Pete goes on an arc as well. And I think the Pete at the end has a much clearer and more positive view of himself than the Pete at the beginning does. And even though he does sacrifice himself, even though he does die, I see it as a happy ending for him.
I refuse to see anything that ends someone sacrificing themselves as a happy ending for that person.
And that's totally fair.
Is it the end? That is not a happy ending for them.
Yeah. Yeah, like within the context of what's possible for him. Like if
they die, it's an automatic lose. It's an automatic fail. Death is an automatic fail. Automatic no. Automatic zero. That is a hard line for me. Unless it's in a universe with an established afterworld, which this is not one of those, unless there is a substantial established point, unless the story continues, Alt Pete does not count.
No. I was going to bring up the library. The ending scene of the library, there's a heaven scene with River and all of her archaeology buddies.
That doesn't count.
Okay.
They're trapped in a computer with the same five people for the rest of eternity. That sounds like hell rather than heaven. I'm just saying, I would rather die than be trapped with the same five people.
Well, you have the whole world. You don't have to stay with them.
No. Hell no.
All right.
Actually, River wasn't contained to the library, so never mind. River could leave the library, so I take it back. Because River could travel around the universe. But River Song is a whole other problem.
River Song is a whole other problem. Which, you don't want to talk about Father's Day? I don't want to talk about River Song. River Song makes me so angry. But we're going to have to. Let's finish Father's Day. Okay, we're nearly done. Pete walks out. He gets hit by the car. And Rose gets to hold his hand as he dies. And we find out at the end that Rose has changed the history a little bit. So the story that Jackie says at the very beginning about how Pete dies is different to the story we get at the end.
So does Rose have double memories now?
I'm not sure. I think she does. I think it's an Eye of the Storm situation where if you're the one at the center, you remember both.
And that's what happened to Amy.
Yeah. Okay. So Talia, what was your least favorite and favorite moment of Father's Day?
I want to get this done with as soon as possible. So I'll say my least favorite was probably the doctor saying that he picked another stupid ape to travel with. My favorite is when he was talking to Stuart and Sarah and said that, of course, he would save them.
My least favorite moment is probably the same as yours, actually. That first argument, it's just so awful. I hate it. No, actually, my least favorite moment is when Jackie and Pete are fighting. And specifically the moment where Jackie gets it into her head that somehow Pete had Rose when he was 11 and all that kind of stuff. It's just so awful. That whole dynamic is so awful. And I get that somehow they needed to get Rose and baby Rose to touch. I don't feel like making Jackie and Pete's relationship that dysfunctional was the way to do it. And it's also a real disservice to Jackie, which I always hate.
And also I feel like it is so hurtful to Jackie to make her think that Pete named their daughter after a daughter he already had.
Yeah. My favorite moment is the final conversation between Pete and Rose. I know it's very sad. It's still my favorite moment.
You're benched. Just go. It's where you belong. Sleep on there now. It's your home.
I will. I'll make it my throne. Demand things from on high. I think Pete was the hero, and I think Rose was the Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if is the doctor the Adam?
I don't know.
Because honestly, like, all this happens because the doctor doesn't.
Can we say that the Rose doctor dynamic is the Adam?
Yeah.
Like, it's not them individually, it's them together.
Do you know what? Do you know what this episode dynamic reminded me of, actually?
What?
It reminded me of 10 Rose.
Ah, you're right.
It reminded me of when 10 and Rose are in an argument with each other and they're not working together properly.
You're right. Can we please move on now? I want to be done.
Fine, we can grade it. I think the production is great. I love the way that this whole episode is directed. I think it's beautiful. There are certain shots, particularly of...
Okay, let's give it a 5 and move on. Writing. I'm just kidding. What are the certain shots?
There are certain shots in particular of people's eyes. The way that Joe Ahene shoots only certain aspects of people and uses close-up is really affecting.
Little baby, little blue eyes.
The reaction shots with the baby are also some of my favorite moments. There are moments when all the adults are yelling at each other and then we just cut to the baby being like, I didn't ask to be here. This is uncomfortable for me, the baby.
I want to give the writing a 3 because some of it's so good, but the 9 Rose dynamic is so bad.
Can we give it a 4?
Ugh.
Thank you.
Acting deserves a 5.
Acting 5. 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5.
I give the science a 2.
No. Okay, so let's actually look at the science. So I think the paradox stuff, all of the big picture science stuff, I think all works really well. I also like the idea that as time gets more and more corrupted, more things go wrong, like the whole Graham Bell phone call happening. And
let's give it a 4. If it'll shut you up, we can give it a 4. Rewatchability deserves a 0.
No.
Fine. You probably want to give it a 5.
No, I wouldn't give it a 5 because it is really hard to watch. I do think it's worth watching, though.
Okay, fine. Meet in the Middle?
Fine. We'll give it a 2 for rewatchability. Fastest grading we ever did.
I'll be done with this.
Okay. We'll let you get to bed. It's a 0.8. 80%. B minus.
This has been the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram as @WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms as it helps other people find us and our content.
Special thanks to our editor, Owen Elphick, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.